Hello, my name's Ricky Hellier, and I'm a lecturer at Cardiff University School of Healthcare Sciences. And welcome to Behind the Health Statistic. In this episode, I'll be speaking to Fionn Kincaid, who's an expert in sexual health. So what do I mean by sexual health? Well, sexual health, or genitourinary medicine clinics, sometimes called GUM clinics, are areas that have a huge amount of expertise in testing and treating sexually transmitted infections. But you could also go there for other issues such as confidential advice and contraception. So, as I've said, Fionn works in a confidential environment, which is non-judgmental. It provides sexual health provision for patients of all ages, genders, and sexual orientations. So let's think about some of the numbers. In the UK, age consent to any form of sexual activity is 16 for both men and women, and that's whether they're bisexual, homosexual, heterosexual, whatever sexual orientation. And the most common sexually transmitted infection that we see in Wales is chlamydia, and that affects people at the younger ages disproportionately. So what we're seeing in statistics from across the border in England is that there's an increase in people accessing sexual health services and an increase in the amount of screenings being done. There's been small increases in terms of the amount of people diagnosed with chlamydia, first episode of genital herpes and first episode of genital warts. However, there is marked increases in infections like syphilis. It really is a fascinating area, and I hope you enjoy the interview. So, over to Fionn. Hiya, so it's Dr. Ricky Hellier, and I'm really lucky to have Fionn with us today, who's going to tell us a little bit about her role and what sexual health is. So, hiya, Fionn, you okay?
Hello, yes, thanks for having me.
No, that's lovely. Thanks ever so much for agreeing. So, like, we're going to start off with a little bit. Can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and about the role?
Yeah, sure. So, I qualified as a nurse just over 3 years ago. And I started nursing in primary care, so in GP practices. So I was a practice nurse to start with. Then I moved into the prison service, where I did a little bit of substance misuse nursing, which I really enjoyed. After this, I went back to practice nursing. While I was there, I found I was really interested in the sexual health side of things, the women's health side of things. And I found that that was the bit of my job that I really looked forward to. And I'd always say, oh, if I could do one thing all day, every day, it would be sexual health. And then a job came up within the sexual health clinic. And I've been working there just under a year as a sexual health nurse practitioner. And yeah, that's what I do. My role is quite autonomous. I'm really enjoying it. I'm part of a really supportive team, a really diverse team. And it's just really where my interest lies in nursing.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's really good. It's such an interesting field, honestly. Really interesting. So tell us, like, I know, just to start off, What sort of stuff do you do on a day-to-day basis then?
Yeah, so it's very varied. And I think before I worked in sexual health myself, I don't think I realised how much went on in sexual health or what services you could access through sexual health. I think kind of growing up, your idea of a sexual health clinic is maybe not so positive and where you go to get testing and that's that. But I soon discovered there's lots of advanced, really specialist clinics. So every day is very different. We run an urgent clinic every day. So that'll be full of patients that are symptomatic. They've got abnormal symptoms. They need to be seen on a fairly urgent basis. And they may be reviewed by a nurse practitioner, a registrar, a consultant. We all kind of share the workload with that. Obviously, if fairly complex or difficult cases need consultant review, then that will happen. But otherwise, we all just share it out between us. In the background, there's lots of contraception clinics going on. So long-acting contraception clinics like implant fitting, coil fitting, so methods of contraception that last a bit longer than things like pills and injections. And then There's other specialist clinics. So we run a PrEP clinic. So PrEP is pre-exposure prophylaxis for HIV. We run one of those every week. That's a virtual clinic. And then the consultants and some of the other staff are very specialist clinics. So there's a clinic for advanced consultants in certain areas that will do complex contraception. So patients that are really restricted with what types of contraception they can access, maybe due to health issues or medical history, or people that have had a difficult consultation or a difficult experience perhaps in their GP trying to have a coil fitted just because of anatomy reasons, things aren't as simple. So they can come and see one of our consultants. And we also run a psychosex clinic as well. So that's covered by members of staff that have done specialist training and looks at kind of the psychological aspect to sexual health issues and sexual health problems. So it's very interesting. Every day is different. And that's what I think I really enjoy about sexual health is that we all rotate, we all share the workload, and you're doing something different every day.
Yeah. You know, you're right. You know, you said like growing up, you've got this like image of what a sexual health clinic is. And I suppose if I was to think back what I thought it would be, I would imagine like loads of embarrassed young people just waiting to go in to either have some antibiotics or to get pre-condoms, but it's not that. Tell us about like the different people you see and the different people that reason the different reasons people come to you.
I totally agree. That was my idea of sexual health as well growing up, the clinic, and perhaps not a very positive thought about it. And I definitely was under the influence that, like you say, it's when you're younger, it's full of young people that are waiting for antibiotics or testing. But we do really see patients of all ages. So, you know, we do see young people. That's part, you know, part of it. But we see people who are in their 60s, 70s. So it's diverse in that sense, in that that's what we try to tell all of our patients. You know, sexual health will affect you throughout lifetime in different ways. So the reasons why you access sexual health in your 20s may differ for why you access sexual health in your 60s, 70s. It may be exactly the same reason as why you accessed it in your 20s. And it's really nice to see such a wide range of service users, you know, approaching for different reasons. I think it's definitely not what I expected in a good way.
So you said you've got people like, you do see young people. What sort of range do you see from young people? What age range and what are they tending to come in for, B?
Yeah, so definitely, obviously, a large part of our patient group, I suppose, is young people. We do run an under 18 service. So we have had people or patients as young as 12 years old access our clinic. Obviously, that comes with complexities of itself in that we are dealing with a 12-year-old in sexual health. So that's a quite a complex, you know, situation where, but it does happen. And we're very lucky that we've got consultants that would, you know, definitely assist in the management of that sort of patient. So the under 18s clinic is really useful for the younger person to access contraception, condoms, testing, advice on safe relationships, healthy relationships, consent, you know, starting off from scratch of the attitudes and the behaviour they should expect, you know, the positive behaviour they should expect, and just promoting healthy relationships and safer sex. So we're really lucky that we work with lots of sort of external teams that help us with that. So whereas we try to cover as much as we can, and we do also help with the kind of counselling side of things. We work with lots of teams, like tertiary teams then, that help us support our patient group from the outside. So for example, there's a sexual health outreach team, which are made up of lots of brilliant, brilliant members of staff. And they can assist in things like helping those who are under 18 get to their appointments, because it's not always as simple as okay, I'll tell my mum that I'm going to the sexual health clinic. Like, it's, you know, that's not always easy. So it can boil down to just how easy it is to even get to the clinic. How are we going to facilitate this appointment for somebody who doesn't drive, who should be in school, that sort of thing. So they really help. They have really good communication with schools and their teachers, and explaining why they might need to access healthcare at certain times. So yeah, even clientele as young as 12 all the way up to, you know, 70s, 80s, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you said some of those outreach services as well. I mean, obviously we've spoken in the past about things like the outreach services for people working in the sex industry you talked to me about before, yeah.
Yes, yeah. So we're really lucky. We've got some of our nurse practitioners have taken kind of a special interest or taken on an extra role. So one of our nurse practitioners does outreach services to the prisons or the local prison. So provide sexual health clinics there for testing and treatment and management within the secure setting, so within a prison. And we have another nurse practitioner who delivers sexual health outreach to commercial sex workers and sex parlours as well. So that's brilliant, because I think going back to the thinking of under 18s, the person may be, or the patient may be very willing to access sexual health, but it could even boil down to how are they going to get here? How are they going to get to their appointment? You know, there's work commitments, there's school commitments. So outreach, I think, is so important. And, you know, we're making it accessible for those where it's not so simple to just turn up to an appointment, and taking the services to them, making sure they're able to access, you know, contraception, safer sex, condoms, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And I tell you what, is one of the things that always impresses me is how passionate you are about your job. And I think in just two patient groups we talked about then, in terms of people who are maybe young, potentially vulnerable, maybe people who work in the sex industry, and that role in safeguarding you have. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, I think this was something that maybe I was a little bit naive to before starting my role in sexual health. But there is a massive, massive role or a massive place for safeguarding within sexual health. So when we think about that, we are seeing people that are under the age of 18, we're seeing them when they're 12, 13, that comes with its own complexities and safeguarding concerns, but also those that are vulnerable in other ways. It could be through substance misuse, it could be through commercial sex work, it could be that they've been a victim of domestic violence or sexual assault. So we definitely something that we see very, very often. And yeah, a role that I don't think I think is so important within sexual health, and I think is something that I was naive to before I started in sexual health, in thinking that maybe that wouldn't be an area where you see so much safeguarding concerns and vulnerabilities, but it absolutely is. I'm really grateful to work within a team where we've got so many different practitioners with different interests, that, you know, we can provide the support to these patients. But definitely there are some really, really complex cases that arise within sexual health that means we've all kind of got to put our heads together and work with other agencies. And sometimes the safeguarding teams, the social services teams, just to get a plan in place and make sure that our patients are safe. So yeah, it's definitely, I think that's one of the main roles, you know, within my post is to safeguard and to safety net those patients moving forward. And often things arise within sexual health, within their appointments, that, you know, you may not expect, but then we support them going forward.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. Can I ask you a little bit about, in my mind, again, and this is out of ignorance, sorry, is I know some of, you know, I don't know much about it in terms of some of the conditions. So automatically, I think about things like chlamydia. I would think about HIV. Can you tell me about the conditions that you see?
Yeah, Yeah, so absolutely. I think the first thing that springs to everyone's mind is chlamydia or gonorrhea, the common ones, which is absolutely fair enough. But there's things that I've come across, you know, since working in sexual health that I was completely unaware of before working there. So we see chlamydia and gonorrhea, absolutely, they're very common. And the good thing about those things is they are usually very easily treated. We see some conditions that maybe, or some sexually transmitted infections that aren't as common or as talked about or as heard of as chlamydia and gonorrhea. So there's a bacteria or an infection called MGEN, which usually we only test for if sort of standard treatment or testing is not bringing us up the answers that we were thinking of. They've not responded, their symptoms haven't responded to standard treatment or tests are negative and the patient is still symptomatic, then we move forward and test for MGEN because it's a little bit more uncommon. That also luckily is usually very easily treated. And another one that we see within sexual health that I wasn't aware of before working in sexual health is Trichomonas vaginalis, so we call it TV. And we're very lucky in the sexual health clinic where I work that we've got microscopy facilities. So there's some conditions that we can diagnose or very highly suspect on the day, enough so that we are so certain we're happy to treat on the day without waiting for those lab results, because we can have a little look under the microscope and see if we can see signs of that infection. And then obviously, yeah, the, like you said, HIV, we're also very lucky, I think, within our sexual health clinic that we've got our unit, a very specialist unit for those living with HIV. And that team is the team that cares for those patients is very diverse. We've got clinical nurse specialists in HIV that oversee a lot of these patients' care, as alongside the doctors and the consultants that also work there as well. And I think it's just so broad. There's so much I've come across that I've never heard of, I've never come across, that was a shock to me before I worked there or when I started working there. So yeah, and we've got lots of different ways to diagnose. We've got the microscope, we've got testing in all different, you know, blood testing, we've got urine testing and vaginal samples. So yeah, it's very, very diverse. And I think until you maybe work in sexual health or access sexual health, there's things that you wouldn't have come across, and that's absolutely fair enough.
Can I ask you, like, this is brilliant, Fee. Honestly, I'm really enjoying speaking to you.
Yeah.
Stigma is obviously a huge thing, yeah? Especially,
yeah.
Or is it, here's me presuming, is it still a thing?
Tell me
about that, and then what do you do to overcome that then?
I think that's probably, I was trying to have a think about, you know, the role, and I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges that we face as healthcare professionals within sexual health is the stigma that surrounds sexual health. I think we're in a better place now regarding sexual health, looking back, you know, compared to 20 years ago, but we're still in a place where sexual health is just regarded or thought about in a different way, I feel, in general, compared to other aspects of physical health. So I think that can pose a difficulty for us, where we really want our patients, or we really want the public, everybody, to feel comfortable in accessing sexual health. So I think part of the battle is that people have feelings of embarrassment or confusion or unsurety or uncertainty about the symptoms they may be experiencing or what to do about what they're experiencing, that we're facing a barrier before they've even got to the clinic, and that they feel embarrassed to attend, they feel embarrassed to call, they're not sure where's best to go. And then you've also got, when they do access sexual health services, there's lots, often misconceptions about what we discuss or what could entail going forward. So, you know, we very often diagnose in the clinic and we treat, and the amount of misconceptions that we come across, just things that people have heard or rumors, or my friend said that this could never be treated and I'm going to have this for life, and these things aren't accurate, depend on what we're talking about, and it's battling that. So, you know, trying to get people to access it to start with, and then there's often very lots of misconceptions and myths and hearsay that people have heard about sexually transmitted infections. And I think another huge challenge is that people can feel so upset, so distraught, you know, and there's nothing to take away from those emotions because they're very real. And often that upset and that just horrible feeling of, oh my gosh, I've got this STI. Oh my gosh, I've got chlamydia. I never thought that I would have chlamydia. Makes it so hard to reassure these patients that it's an infection. It's an organ. You use it. It's quite commonly infected, you know? So we try and bring it back to other physical health and say, well, you know, would you be too worried about a chest infection or a throat infection? Or and think of it that way and normalize it, you know? These things, there's lots of infections we see that are so common, you know, or viruses that we know majority of the population carry. So I think for certain infections or certain viruses that we do see or diagnose within the clinic, a lot of it is to do with sort of counseling in a way of, you don't have to be upset about this. You don't need to be embarrassed. It's very, very common. If you have sex, you're affected by sexual health. But we work with one of the consultants that says to her patients, well, you're here because somebody had sex, so stop worrying about it, you know, bringing it back to just trying to relax these people, I suppose, in feeling okay. But it's really, really hard, for sure.
Yeah, and one of the things, you know, I've learned, particularly over the last few weeks and that, is I'm so blown away by how much thought has gone into your systems, like down to the fact that, so if you have got an infection, it's how you've got that quick access to treatment to save you going to a pharmacy. Mm-hmm. And the other thing about that, the Frisky Wales sort of program, can you tell us a little bit about those things, please?
Yeah, of course. So, like you said, we're quite lucky. This is the only sexual health clinic I've worked in, so I can't assume that other sexual health clinics are the same in the way that they manage their medications, but majority of the medications we provide, or the antibiotics or topical treatments that we provide, we keep a stock. So often we're able to diagnose infections or conditions on the day and just give the patient the treatment to go home with, like actually in their hands, rather than here's a prescription, go to find a pharmacy and wait for the prescription. So I think we're really lucky in that sense, in that, yeah, we've got our own integrated pharmacy within the unit. So that means that we can stock up on all of our medications. One of the fairly newish ways of testing is, like you said, I think majority of people know it as Frisky Wales, but we refer to it now as Sexual Health Wales, and it's a home testing kit. So it means that, I think this makes it even easier now for some people to access sexual health services, in that, like you say, some of the stigma is around, well, I don't want to go to the clinic. What if I see someone I know? It's the clinic. I know somebody that works there. And depending on what you need to access, if it is just testing that you want to access, then you can do that from the comfort of your home. So it's a website. You follow a link. They ask you what your sexual orientation are. What is your preferences with when you have sex, and what sort of sex do you have? Just to recommend the correct kit or correct sort of testing avenues for you. And then it's sent to your home, very discreet sort of packaging. It looks like any other package that would come through the door. It's free of charge. Comes with really detailed instructions of how to complete it, how to label it up. It goes back in the same bag. You pop it in the post box. And I think often people think, well, oh no, I'd rather go to the sexual health clinic for very accurate testing, more in-depth testing. But they can provide the same testing as we would offer, in terms of blood screening and swabs and urine samples, for the kind of standardized screening. If we're thinking of something a little bit more complex or something that's not very common, then that's different, and that's usually when we're looking at somebody who is symptomatic. And we also reassure our patients that often the results you'll get through the home testing system, through Sexual Health Wales testing, are quicker than our results. They'll be quicker than if you come to the clinic, because they have their own sort of private lab, the lab that they use just for that testing system, whereas our samples will go to a hospital where other samples are processed, so it tends not to be as quick. So yeah, I think that's two of those things, that having the medication at hand for majority of things, where we can just give the patient the treatment to go home with, and the home testing system, I think is brilliant. I think it, for some people, it really, really makes it a lot easier and a lot more comfortable to access sexual health services.
Brilliant. And I've only got a few more questions for you, if that's all right.
Go on, yeah.
One of the things, right, it's always been noticeable about you, because we've known each other for, for a fair few years now. You're like, you're a superb communicator. Always have been. You're great at it.
Thank you.
That, you know, when you're dealing with clients, how you must have to hone those skills to pick up on stuff, because just people want to withhold stuff or might be afraid to say something. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think all health professionals will have that intuition, I suppose, or that gut feeling that maybe something's not right or something isn't the whole story, or you almost have to do a little bit of digging because you want to get to the bottom of what the problem is. And I think that's even more so relevant within sexual health, with the stigma that surrounds sexual health, the way that people may not want to tell you how many sexual partners they've had in the last month or how long their symptoms have been happening for without them wanting to access healthcare for it, or those sort of things that surround it, I think are challenges in themselves. So yeah, I think communication is so, so important in sexual health. And it's often, it could be the way that you make somebody feel comfortable within that consultation, so they feel like it is a safe space to open up about how they're feeling or what they're experiencing or what their history is. And then also the way that you respond to what they disclose or what they tell you. And I think empathy is one of the biggest things within nursing healthcare, but within sexual health, is you may have not lived that experience, but trying as much as you can to put yourself in their shoes as such. And the way that a diagnosis or an infection or an experience will affect one person will not be the same for another person. So somebody may be absolutely, you know, calm and happy and fine, absolutely fine, and deal with things in a very different way. For example, an infection diagnosis, and other people, it would be heartbreaking, you know, because that could have implications on their relationship or their friendships, their work. There's so many things. There's so many aspects holistically that we're looking at that this could impact. So for sure, I think that's something that I've tuned into more. More so working in sexual health, is that gut feeling. I think often the one thing I've come across within sexual health, which I think is amazing, is how much we focus on the safety of the patient. When we're discussing sexual health and sexual history, it's quite a vulnerable thing to discuss. It's quite, for some people, it's a very, very difficult thing to discuss. And I think we sometimes notice, maybe if we're having discussions on the telephone, if the patient says they're safe to speak on the telephone, we notice maybe that person or that patient doesn't seem very comfortable or may seem like they're withholding information. And then it's our responsibility to say, okay, are we looking at a safety concern here? Is this person not able to talk openly at home or at work or wherever they are? And trying to encourage as much as we can for them to come into clinic, so that we've got them, you know, on their own in a safe space where they can open up and disclose, you know, whatever they're happy to disclose. So yeah, I found it really, really interesting within sexual health, in that sometimes what you're being told or what you can see just doesn't maybe sit right, and it makes you ask those further questions and use definitely different communication styles with different patients and different service users to get the information that you need to carry on.
Amazing, yeah. So if, I was going to ask you a piece of advice, right? I was going to say, have you got a piece of advice you'd give to someone who wants to go work in sexual health? But you've already like done that within that answer. I thought there was so much to say. Yeah. So can I twist it around a little bit then?
Yeah.
What advice would you give to anybody, and I mean anybody, you know, member of the public, or you know, we do get people from, it's not just healthcare professionals, there's healthcare students, thinking about their own sexual health. And I know that's a big, broad question. And if it's just like a little nugget of something, what sort of like pearl of wisdom would you give?
Yeah, I think that's something we wish we could find a perfect answer for and deliver it everywhere. Because at the end of the day, we're healthcare professionals, and we want people to feel as comfortable as maybe they would feel accessing health for different reasons for their sexual health needs as well. That being said, for some people, accessing health in general, regardless of sexual health and different aspects, is just not easy. But I think in terms of those who are maybe worried or feel embarrassed or unsure about accessing their sexual health service, it would be that it's completely non-judgmental, and it is a safe space. Our role is for sexual health. We chose to work in sexual health. I think that's another good point, because often patients go, oh, I feel so sorry for you after having to look at this or see this. And I say, I wanted to work here. Like, you know, we all chose to work in sexual health. And it is, I can only speak for my clinic, but the team is so full of enthusiastic, interested, motivated members of staff. And nothing will shock us. That's a good one. Nothing will shock us. Nothing's going to take us by surprise. I think it makes it easier for us and easier for the patient to be as open as possible. So I think sometimes we have consultations where maybe there's a first history that we take, and we're thinking, okay, this is a difficult one, like, you know, based on this history and this treatment, and things shouldn't be looking like this. And it just takes that building up that report and having a bit more of a conversation that you get maybe a slightly different history or a little bit more disclosure of information. And that'll help us help the patient. So I think so it's easier said than done, but don't be afraid to access your sexual health service. We're all within our clinic, very enthusiastic about this. And we chose to work in this speciality for a reason. And I would encourage people to try and think of sexual health the way that they feel about other aspects of health. It's an organ, you use it. It can get infected. That is it. That's the short and the long of it.
That's an interesting choice of words there, Fee.
I know. We're talking about sexual health.
Oh, Fee, do you know what? I just want to say thanks so much for that. It's like I said to you before, the more I speak to you, I just, part of me thinks if I had my time again, I think I'd work in it, because it's so fascinating, just from that, like, the pathophysiology to the ethics, to the social aspects, to all of that stuff, isn't it? You know,
it is so broad and so, so interesting. I would definitely, like you said about, and you said about healthcare professionals, like, what advice would you give somebody who's maybe considering sexual health? We now, within our clinic, we take on newly qualified nurses, you know, straight from university. And I think it's such an interesting area. And I feel like, obviously, like anywhere, you won't know if you like it or don't like it until you give it a go. So I think I would encourage anyone kind of within their studies, medical students, midwifery students, nursing students, anywhere where there may be an opportunity within your career to work in sexual health, you know, request a spoke day, a shadow day, come and have a taster, because how else will you know unless you turn up for a day and see how you feel? But it is so broad. It's ever growing. I think we're definitely in a more positive position with sexual health, I feel, compared to a good few years ago, in terms of health promotion. Like, we have PrEP and all of these amazing things going on to help protect these patients and keep them safe and keep them healthy. But I think we've still got a lot of work to do, for sure. And that's what we're trying to do by doing these things, is spread the word that we, you know, we're here, and there is absolutely no shame in accessing your sexual health clinic, for sure.
Oh, Fee, that's amazing. Thanks so much for that. And it's lovely speaking to you. It's really good. Thanks ever so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's been lush.
So a massive thank you to Fionn. Honestly, it was such an interesting interview for me to do, and I learned so much. And for me, the takeaway message is that we need to reduce the stigma around sexual activity. It is part of life. And just remind ourselves that people like Fionn and her colleagues across clinics across the UK, across Wales, do provide a confidential and non-judgmental sexual health provision service. And it's for people of all ages, all genders, and all orientations. So it's really important for us to sort of, like I said, reduce that stigma and think about it as just part of life. In terms of further information, remember you can attend those clinics. There's nothing wrong with attending a sexual health clinic for advice or contraception, or if you're concerned about a sexually transmitted infection. But if you'd like to look up the internet, some great resources out there, including Sexual Health Wales and the NHS Wales website, which covers the Frisky Wales project that we talked about. So a massive thank you for listening.